Welcome, everyone. The date is November 3rd, 2011, and welcome to the second presentation in our Ontologies and Standards series, jointly with the International Association of Ontology and Its Applications. My name is Michael Gruninger, and together with John Bateman, we coordinate the International Association of Ontology and Its Applications Standardization Coordination Committee. The role of this committee is to foster interactions between the ontology community and the standards community, and also to facilitate the application of ontologies to existing and emerging standards. So this covers a broad range of efforts, standards that contain ontologies, standards related to the ontology lifecycle, and other approaches that are using ontologies to augment or harmonize standards. Last session, we heard from the Onto-IOP project, which is an emerging standard under development dealing with ontology mappings and relationships. What we'll be hearing about this session will be a family of standards related to metadata and metadata registries. And I'll just bring up here, and it is my pleasure to introduce our speaker for today, Elisa Kendall, who has worked long and hard in the bridging the communities of ontologies and software engineering. She is quite active in Object Management Group, OMG, and historically with a model-driven architecture, and also with UML-based ontology analysis. She has worked in various other projects related to OMG. She is the co-editor of the Ontology Definition Metamodel, ODM, and she is an active participant in the metadata working group within ISO. That's in SC32 Working Group 2, and that will be the focus for today's talk. And most recently, Elisa has launched a new endeavor known as, I guess the company is called Thematics. So, Elisa, let's hear all about there's a pretty slide for today here, ontology-related metadata standards.
Thanks very much, Michael. So just by way of bringing a few of you up to date, many of you, if you knew of my work before, will recognize Sandpiper Software as the organization. We're in the process of rebranding. So Thematics Partners is the new brand. And we launched a little bit earlier this year. Sandpiper still exists and has been developing tools for UML-based ontology editing, but we're in the process, as I said, of rebranding and migrating our work to Thematics. And so you get to see our new logo and new name for the first time to this community today. So thank you for the introduction. I have to say, as Denise knows well, I've been taking a back seat just this last year, although I'm hoping after the first of the year to rejoin the SC32 work. Because of a family illness, I've had to sort of cut down some of the work that I've been doing. But in the process of taking a step back, I was also elected to the architecture board at the OMG. And so some of what I'm going to share with you today gives kind of the overview of the landscape of metadata standards that are relevant to what SC32 does, and some of it will be from my OMG hat to talk about the synergy between the two organizations, what's going on and what is coming. I think a lot of the work that's been going on to date, especially on standards like 19763, has been a little bit under the radar for this group. And so while I know that Bruce Bargmeier and some other folks have talked about 11179 before, the extension for 19763 may be less familiar to folks. So I will spend a few minutes on that and then talk about some synergies across the ISO and OMG communities and where we think things are going next. Next slide, please, Peter. What I want to start with is some motivation. And some of the work that I've done with colleagues at OMG and also as a consultant to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory was to look at their metadata management requirements now and going forward, particularly in an organization responsible for what is called end-to-end data accountability. And by that, they mean from the time a scientist decides that they want some experiment to be run on a spacecraft and sends the request for that experiment to be run, until they get the data back, that whole loop is considered end-to-end data accountability from a JPL perspective. And one of the main distinctions between asking for information and getting it back in a sort of normal ground-based setting and doing so when you have spacecraft in the loop that are very, very far away from us is that you may need to wait time-wise for some number of days before chunks of data are able to be transmitted. And all of that has to do with bandwidth, but also with power on the spacecraft, whether or not there is sun shining on the solar panels, whether or not there is a Martian dust storm going on. There are many, many reasons why the data might get delayed and needs to be reassembled once it arrives back at JPL. And so over the years, they've collected data from hundreds and hundreds of experiments that have been run, and they maintain all of that in a repository that's known as the Planetary Data Store, or PDS. That data store contains more than 40 years of planetary and other solar system data, data that reaches out further into the universe more recently, especially due to better instrumentation and better longer distance of some of the spacecraft that have been out there for a long time, such as Voyager. The interesting thing is that when they receive this data, they need to be able to describe it and manage it in a way that not only works with today's technology, but that will continue to work 40 or 50 years from now. And if you take a look back at how technology, especially with regard to repositories and storage and other things, has changed over the last 40 or 50 years, there's absolutely no way to anticipate what people would want to do with the information that was collected long before their time, or long after their time. So the people that are doing this work now to create a rich metadata repository for use in downstream experiments understand not only how long from now that data has to remain relevant, but even in cases where it might be reusable today, you need to reflect the fact that these experiments are only run maybe once. If you're lucky enough to have the rocket fire and the satellite get shot into space properly, and then it lands on Mars and you can still talk to it once it gets there, the idea that you can rerun many of these experiments because the data didn't turn out exactly the way you want, or you might want to try again to get a different perspective, or you lost some of it along the way, it just doesn't work. It has to, you get one shot, and it has to be managed in such a way that it can be reused for many other purposes downstream. So a couple of examples. On the slide that you're looking at, slide two, the photo of the entire planet of Mars in the sort of left-hand upper corner of the slide was taken, I think, in 2003. And that's one of the photos that you typically see when there's some Mars mission or spacecraft that is discussed in the media. So they take whole pictures of the planet because that's what people like to see. They like to see something familiar that looks like Mars, that, you know, rings bells, gets people's attention. Oh, they're talking about something cool about some new finding on Mars. Terrific. But that photo is almost 10 years old. And so it comes from this vast repository called the Planetary Dataset. We have many, many, many of these kinds of photos. But it was taken a long time ago, and the reason they don't necessarily use a newer photo is that the instruments that they're using now take much richer, much deeper images of a much narrower slice of the planet. And they compose those, and they put them together over time, and they may not have the right angles, and they may only have caught part of the part of an edge that they want to capture or part of a section that they want to capture in a certain path of the satellite. So what they have to do is take all of these images, and there are many, many, many of them, and create a composite to reflect that entire view of the planet that they would use today. And because, as you see in those slices sort of on the right, they're more narrow, they're more detailed, they're black and white, they don't look like the orange planet, they're not necessarily as sexy from a media perspective, so maybe they still want to use the 2003 photo, even if we had the composite richer view available. On the other hand, the scientists that they work with really care about those narrow slices to look at the features of the surface of the planet and to make decisions about their next move with either a spacecraft that's still there or something that they're planning to launch in the future. So this repository is incredibly important. I would describe it as a national treasure. And the only way that they've been able to manage it to date and that they can foresee managing it in the future so that the data, which is not just imagery but infrared and all of the detailed chemical experiments and other things that they've done, is still relevant and available 40 years from now. So next slide. We'll move to slide 3. So one of the things I do in my spare time, and I'm sure other ontologists do this as well, I've certainly run into other modelers who do, is a little bit of family genealogy. And in using tools like Ancestry.com, what I've come to discover is that the provenance for a lot of the evidence that you want to collect about some individual in your family tree is really tough. It's often really poor. Census records totally screw up people's names. They may or may not have included some family member who happened to be out of the house at the moment that the census worker knocked on their door. The records, again, are gathered from a wide variety of sources with varying provenance, varying authority, varying levels of depth, and are incredibly error-prone. And you have to be quite the detective to be able to dig through what they have, what you can get from your relatives, what you can get by visiting libraries or going to cemeteries and all of that to try to put a story together. But those same capabilities in terms of being able to do those really deep searches or composition of this kind of information with reasonable provenance apply for business intelligence or law enforcement or government. All of them require a significant amount of terminology reconciliation, and all of them require a significant amount of metadata. So next slide, slide 4. The landscape of the standards that have been developed over the last probably 20, 30 years to address some of these areas is much broader than the general ontology community may realize. Some of the ISO standards for terminology work have been in use for probably 20 or 30 years. Many are domain independent, and the ones that we're going to talk about today, the ISO terminology standards maintained by TC37, the ISO metadata standards managed by JTC1 to C32, all of those are domain dependent. Many have been in wide use for many, many years, typically for very rich cross-organizational, cross-domain applications like the Planetary Data Store or like the repository that Denise's group manages under CA Big and CADSR programs at the National Institutes of Health. So the standards have been out there for a long time. They've been implemented using various kinds of technology, perhaps early on, basically on paper, before they ended up being computerized and in various kinds of technologies over the years. But they, in addition to that long history, what they allow you to do is to manage things like the planetary data store in a way that it can be long-lived and in a way that you can find things 40 years after they were captured. There are many domain-specific metadata standards out there, and the ISO community has a boatload of them. One that we've been working with at OMG most recently is ISO 20022, which is widely used for financial industry messaging, and there is interest at this point in developing an ontology for a part of that. XBRL is doing the same thing. XBRL International is now looking at developing an abstract conceptual model as well as ontologies to support parts of the standard. Other community-driven metadata standards have very broad appeal, like the Dublin Core metadata terms or the SCOS vocabulary from W3C. And those have grown up not from the ISO community, but from other need of people that were wanting to build out ontologies or vocabularies or other kinds of conceptual models for various purposes. So Dublin Core came from the digital libraries community, for example. And SCOS, which it was developed at the W3C, was created with cross-pollination from folks in the digital libraries community, other folks who worked on the OWL language, as well as a number of individuals who had some background in more of the ISO metadata standards work. And their idea was to create something lighter weight that could bridge those communities. And many more of these kinds of standards have been developed by vertical industry organizations. One that I've been involved with over the last year is called the Open Travel Alliance. They developed the metadata and messaging interfaces for use by all the travel aggregators, including Expedia, Travelocity, Sabre, Amadeus in Europe, many of the airlines. I think almost all of them use the OTA standards, the hotel chains, the car rental companies. They all use these messaging standards for exchanging information about bookings, about changes in travel, about your travel profile, all of that sort of stuff between the companies that put together your travel itinerary. Okay, slide five, please. So ontology alone isn't necessarily enough to help bridge the metadata requirements of these communities, especially when you're talking about things that have been managed for more than 40 years. But ontology with metadata provides a very sound foundation for doing that. And as you've heard here at Ontolog Forum on many occasions, emergency services, intelligence, law enforcement, the National Cancer Institute, organizations like the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, any who have very large distributed repositories like the Planetary Data Store, have been using metadata for a long time before they even learned that ontologies were useful or a possibility for extending their capability. And that metadata management is incredibly rich. It's incredibly rigorous. There's a well-thought-out process behind it. And the standards that have come out of the ISO community for support in that area, particularly ISO 10087 from the TC37 and ISO 11179, which reuses it from SC32, are in wide use in those kinds of organizations. Those heavy lifting standards are less known in some of the vertical industries for financial services or travel, for example. But even those organizations who have their own very rich metadata standards and have been exchanging data, including use of EDI and other things, for many years, understand the need for serious metadata and are starting to consider adopting knowledge-based technologies in ontology. More recently, what we're seeing, at least at OMG, there's a new cloud computing consortium, and the cloud computing is sort of the latest buzzword, but what's apparent from watching them work and from understanding how they're bringing services together, so-called in the cloud, for people to manage their data and use it across a wide variety of services and tools, quote-unquote, in the cloud, enabling that for real will require incredible amounts of metadata and systems integration and interoperability at a level that people are just beginning to understand. So what the big consulting firms are doing currently is they tell you what services you need to use if you want to use their cloud. And they tell you what form your data has to be in order to be interoperable with those services. The choice of using rich metadata and being able to choose which services you want to use or what percentage of your data you want to expose to a particular service, we're not there yet. And I think it will take time to get there. And so one of the real benefits of the work that Ontolog is doing, that Michael is spearheading, and that is coming out of these standards working groups, is that cloud computing is one of the things that it can actually facilitate. And without it, the cloud computing thing, I think, will fall flat over time. Okay, so slide six, please. So the ISO Joint Task Force, JTC1, is responsible for all of the information technology standards produced by the ISO community. SC32 is the working group that is responsible for data management and interchange standards, and I've provided a link to their homepage in the slide. There are four working groups in SC32 who just met in Crete, I think, last week, and Denise Forzels is on the call with the convener for at least a part of that meeting. Includes e-business in Working Group 1. Working Group 2 is the Metadata Standards Working Group. Working Group 3 is focused on database languages and SQL, and there is a fourth working group that I don't know a lot about that is responsible for certain SQL multimedia package. A number of the standards that are produced by SC32, not all of them, but many of us have lobbied for as many as we can possible, are freely available. And those are linked to the homepage for SC32. And so ISO 11179, for example, which is a metadata repository standard, including a fairly rich model in Part 3 for metadata representation, a rich model for conformance where you can choose which parts of that standard that you actually want to commit to, a model and process recommendations for registration of your metadata, all in ISO 11179, and it's freely available on the JTC1 SC32 site. Okay, next slide, seven, please. So the Metadata Standards Working Group, SC32 Working Group 2, is the group responsible for metadata and related standards, and they have their own site, which is linked on this slide. They are best known for development and maintenance of the 11179 metadata registration standard. They are also responsible for receipt of and management of and standardization of a number of well-known OMG standards, including the Meta Object Facility, or MOF, which is the meta modeling subset of UML, and XMI, which is the XML interchange language for UML. They also manage ISO Common Logic, ISO 24707, which was published by SC32, and they will hopefully publish the revision to the ontology definition metamodel, version 1.1, which is due to be published next spring through ISOPath, and others that are in the pipeline, and we'll talk about a couple more later in the presentation. Several of the metadata standards that are published by SC32 depend on ISO 11179, and some of those also depend on standards published elsewhere in JTC1, including the ISO 1087 standard for terminology work that I mentioned previously. Okay, slide 8, please. So ISO 19763 is designed to support metamodel interoperability. So it extends ISO 11179, which includes all of the metadata for metadata repositories, and provides just enough additional metadata in certain areas to allow you to manage models specifically and map across them. So the assumption here is that you already are planning to do an ISO 11179 compliant registry and that you want to extend it specifically to support model interoperability. And so this standard doesn't really stand alone. It actually builds on 11179, and in order to understand it, you need to look at both. The current drafts for many of the parts of 19763 are posted on the WGQ website, that metadata-standards.org site, and are available for you to review and look at, and the working group actually totally appreciates feedback. So the folks that are working on this come primarily out of China, Japan, Korea. There's support from Canada and the UK, and the US has been participating primarily in the higher level 11179 standard, but also in working with the 19763 community to improve both standards together. Parts 1 and 2 of the 19763 have been published for quite a while, and those are available on the working group site. Most of the other sections are relatively early drafts in various stages, committee drafts or working papers and things like that. The original core model, however, the Part 2 from 19763, is being merged with what was a draft Part 4. It's now called Part 10. So I put this in here so that if you look at the website, you'll understand that there's kind of a path you have to follow to get to figure out what's going on with the standard. But Part 10 will include the core model and the core mapping model. And so I've got in a couple of slides after this, I have some diagrams from those to share with you. And the most recent version of that Part 10 was published just before the meeting in Crete. And so that's available for you to look at. It's very current, and it's on the website under ISO 19763. Also on the website, the way that it's organized, it actually shows you some of the steps that are envisioned for the ISO process, and so you have some target dates for when people think that they might be publishing certain sections. That isn't to say it always works out that way, but there are target dates on the site that you can look at to give you a sense of how people envision the standard evolving. Okay, slide 9, please. So the general structure, and keeping in mind that ISO 11179 is the basis for all of the metadata and the 19763 extends that. The core model, mapping model for 19763 then is reused in a bunch of the other parts and extended to support process models, ontology models or registration of those models, information models, and so on. But the core mapping model is quite simple and very accessible and does extend 11179. So slide 10, please. Here are a couple of diagrams from that very recent core document. And so what it shows you is that the kinds of things, suppose you have a model that you have registered as a model in your registry. So that's an identified item using 111.79 terminology is a registered item using 111.79 terminology and is a model. So now you
Denise?
Characteristics of it.
Denise?
Yes, yes.
I'm sorry. I this is Denise. I unmuted myself. I took the liberty to do that because on slide 9, I've looked through your slides, and it doesn't appear you're going to talk about this, and I think this is particularly important in terms of how ontologies are used in 19763. So can we take a minute back on slide 9?
Go ahead.
Really quickly. One thing that isn't depicted here but that is included in each of the standards at the bottom part of this slide, so the standard for information model, the standard for process model, standard for the other parts of 19763, one thing that's included in those standards is that ontologies that have been registered with the ontology registration, concepts are used to annotate the classes, the instances of process models and the instances of information models, the instances of service models, and so forth. So there is an additional relationship between the part that's on ontology and the other parts of 19763, and that role, the annotations of these, of the instances of these models with ontologies that have been registered, we think will play a key role in helping to discover and use and interpret the registered models from a domain-specific ontology perspective. So I just wanted to point that out, that the ontology registration on the left plays a role in annotating the different kinds of metamodels that are registered on the right. Okay?
Thank you.
And I'll mute myself again. Sorry.
Thank you very much, Denise. Okay. So I just wanted to give a very quick view of that basic core model and the mapping model. And so what you see is the ability to both create relationships across models and to create relationships among elements in those models so that they can be better understood. And the annotations that Denise was talking about that are provided in that ontology extension are critical for helping people understand what those element-to-element mappings look like, what they mean, how you can find things, and also to ensure that the mappings remain consistent and manageable. So those pieces of the standard set are really quite good, and the integration of those sort of vertically from ISO 1087, which describes the terminology that one uses to say what is a concept, what is a designation, what is an abbreviation, all of those sorts of things are provided in ISO 1087. They're reused in ISO 11179, which talks about what are the things that you're registering, what are the concepts you're registering, what are the data, what is the related data that you're registering, and how do you link those things to one another. And then 19763 extends that further, as I said, to help you register models themselves and the mappings across them. And the metadata at the 111.79 level in Part 3, Edition 3, I believe is currently in FDIS status. Is that right, Denise? So you have to unmute again. The latest draft is FDIS, I think. Okay. If I was wrong, she would tell me. All right.
Can you hear me? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And when is the publication expected for the actual ISO?
The FDIS is expected to be submitted in January, and then I think it takes 6 months ballot before it turns into an IS.
Okay. Thank you very much. So what's important is for people to start to get familiar with it because it really will, the new edition really will be standardized in the next year and is critical for being able to create some of these metadata mappings. What I want to do now is turn a little bit to what SC32 and Object Management Group have been doing together. There is a formal liaison relationship on the OMG side. I remain the liaison and was remiss in contacting Denise before the call, but I'm glad you're on.
We're on slide 11 now.
Yes. Thank you, Peter. So the relationship is quite good. There are a lot of working discussions, presentations have been given on both sides over the years, back and forth, most recently at the CONA meeting in the springtime. Pete Rivett, who is on the OMG Architecture Board with me and is responsible for the emerging information management meta model, and I'll talk about that in a minute, which replaces CWM for those of you who remember it, gave a presentation at the CONA meeting remotely. There is some overlap in membership, mostly from members from Japan and some of us from the U.S. The ISO-PASS relationship is really quite good. With use of ISO format as we develop OMG standards and then collaboration with ISO editors on the SC32 side to make those standards into what they need to be in order to support the ISO process. Current work at OMG with the targets of ISO-PASS late next year includes the ODM, the ontology definition metamodel, and this emerging information management metamodel that I mentioned. Okay, slide 12, please. So the OMG standards actually do have a basic structure that's important to understand as well. And they all, including UML, the ontology definition metamodel, the information management metamodel that will be replacing the Common Warehouse metamodel, or CWM, and many others, including SOA-ML for services, SysML for systems engineering, BPMN for business process modeling, all of them have at their core a MOF-based metamodel. And MOF, the Meta Object Facility, provides that core for all of these OMG standards. As of the most recent updates to UML and MOF, MOF is a true subset of UML. The relationships over the years have been a bit fuzzy and versioning has been a bit out of sync. But as of UML 2.4, MOF 2.4, and XMI 2.4, they are all synced up again. And MOF is actually a true subset of UML focused on metamodeling. That grounding also supports the work that's going on in the SC32 metadata standards. The diagrams that I showed you from the 9763 core and mapping models are indeed MOF metamodels. And so what's important is that a lot of education has gone on back and forth between the two organizations, the work to make sure that we're able to manage good metamodels and have them interoperate, not using not only the metadata standards work that has gone on in SC32, but all of the infrastructure that's been built out over the years to support the UML standard stack is relevant here. And so being able to integrate those standards, apply the metadata using those standards, bring those metadata profiles into your working space when you're developing a model so that you can reuse the annotations freely, all of that's very important, and there's still ongoing work to make it seamless, but a lot of progress has been made recently in that regard. Okay, slide 14. So I just wanted 13. To give a brief idea, sort of conceptually, how these things play out from an OMG perspective. At sort of the highest levels of abstraction, people are using ontologies and maybe some conceptual models. And the standards that they use for this at OMG include not only the W3C Semantic Web Standards, RDF Schema, and all, which people are somewhat familiar with, Common Logic, which, again, has come out of SC32 but is used also at OMG for a number of standards, and SVVR, which is the Semantics for Business Vocabulary and Rules. And shortly, the Information Management Metamodel, or IMM, will also contribute to that area. IMM provides, for the first time, an industry standard ER, conceptual ER, metamodel and notation, which has been all proprietary for a variety of reasons for the last 20 years. But many of the vendors came together to develop this ER model for the Information Management Metamodel, including Embarcadero, Computer Associates, IBM. I think most of the major players, aside from Sybase, participated in that work to define that conceptual ER model and also to refine the relational model that was in CWM to bring it up to speed. The standards are incredibly important. Understanding the landscape and how these organizations work together is incredibly important to give you a sense of sort of the reasons why some of these things are coming together and what it is that we're doing now at OMG and how that relates to what's going on in SC32. So we are updating the ODM to support OWL2. The revision of that, ODM 1.1, is anticipated in March, and then we'll be working with the editor in WG2, who is Masao Okabe, I believe, or at least he volunteered a while back. That work will take place starting next year. So the ontology definition metamodel, which includes metamodels for RDF and OWL, for common logic, and for isotopic maps, will become an ISO standard over the course of the next couple of years as it works its way through the ISO process. The metamodel in the ODM is identical to the UML diagrams and metamodel provided in the ISO Common Logic standard because we all did them together. So there's, as I said, tremendous synergy between the two groups, similarly with the topic maps model. The work is going on now in SC32 to revise 111.79, references ODM. It also addresses alignment with SCOS and Dublin Core. I mean, there's a number of places where all of these things come together, and it's really important to understand that they actually do work together and you can use them together. The ODM reference metamodels are also referenced and used in 19763, particularly in the ontology part that Denise mentioned. And we are planning at OMG to continue to do work on mappings among a number of the components of IMM with ODM and potentially to validate those and represent those as a test point for 19763. So slide 15, please. So I'm going to run through some of these a bit more quickly to leave some time for discussion. But the current things we're doing at the OMG, in addition to revising the ODM, is a new activity we launched last year, but it's just getting underway, to develop a soup-to-nuts set of APIs for knowledge-based accessibility, ranging from low-level triple store access to high-level ask, tell, retract kinds of operations that you would do on a knowledge base. That effort was driven primarily by a number of us trying to build tools that had to use all sorts of different APIs that don't talk to each other. And so we've invited folks who've developed the OWL API, who've developed the Jenna, who worked on Sesame, who worked on interfaces for triple stores like Mulgara and Allegro Graph. A number of them are coming together in December to talk about how we can actually bring some of those together or at least create a family of APIs that are not don't clash when you try to use them in the same application. And so stay tuned for progress on that. Other work that's been going on at OMG includes a date-time vocabulary, which was informed by OWL time, but also by the VIM and a number of other ISO standards and other standards that are in use in industry. And that vocabulary was adopted, I think, in June or it might have been September, at one of the last two OMG meetings, and the finalization task force is underway, and we're working on owl model of it. So it's quite good. In addition to that, next slide, 16, please. Other things going on include an ODM model that people can use for reference in their UML owl development for Dublin Core and SCoS, and also an ODM model for a standard called ISO 1087 that I've mentioned before, which is a vocabulary for terminology work. We're already working on that jointly with TC37 so that we can publish it together. So we're hoping that once we have that, we can actually also create ODM OWL models of the ISO 11179, at least part 3, for reuse in a standard called Common Terminology Services, or CTS2. CTS2 came out of the healthcare community and is used for terminology transformation across various kinds of systems. It's actually quite good. It was also published recently. The documents are available on the OMG website. I think it was adopted in June. Mayo Clinic and NCI played key roles in making that happen, and it uses a combination of Dublin Core, SCoS, and ISO 11179 as a basis for registration of terminology. So that's an OMG standard. So you can see, I mean, these things are really tightly coupled, and so we try very hard to keep informed of what one another are doing and how we can work together to leverage the few resources that both organizations have. Okay, slide 17, please. So I want to turn briefly to, before we close, to what's happening now at OMG. I mentioned earlier I was recently elected to the Architecture Board, and I have very little knowledge of many of the CORBA-related standards or embedded in real-time system standards that OMG publishes. And so the first thing that, you know, as a new AB member, one wants to do is understand what it is you're supposed to review and how you're supposed to review it. And members of the OMG submit a combination of things when they submit a standard for adoption, including not only the documents but the electronic files. And those electronic files are given to us in XMI. And the conventions for describing URIs are only sometimes supported in these things when they're first given to us. So we're often telling people how to set up their URIs, how to name their files, what they should, how to test whether they conform to XMI properly or not, which oftentimes they don't. There are like a handful of steps that as an AB member we run through almost immediately when somebody hands us something to see whether or not they're even close or whether it means they have to go another meeting cycle. And what we've learned through that whole process is that we're really good at document management, not so hot at electronic file management at OMG. And so bringing my metadata hat to the Architecture Board, I looked around the room at my colleagues and said, why isn't this documented anywhere? Why don't you guys have standards you use for metadata for these XMI files? And they all blinked. It was the funniest thing. So they said, oh, yeah, we need that. And I would have thought for years they would have been doing this, and they don't. So next slide, please, 18. So what we do with the process includes, you know, very rigorous issue management and very rigorous change bars in the convenience documents. And you have to document every word change and show what issue it resolves and all of that sort of stuff. But it's document-centric. It's not electronic file or model-centric. And so because of that, there are a lot of challenges for change management, for model, just for finding the models that are appropriate for what you want to do, for understanding what they say, because oftentimes the text definitions are provided in the document but not in the electronic file. And even for document changes, they don't really use a lot of metadata to mark up the documents in the OMG repository. Slide 19, please. So what we said at the last meeting, in fact, in September, was that we need naming conventions and policies, and we need them not only for the namespaces and where we're going to manage the models, but for namespace prefixes, because many of them are long-lived. So things like SCOS and Dublin Core have namespace prefixes that everyone knows. And so if we're going to support publishing that sort of thing with our models, even though in some cases they're considered syntactic, I think it makes sense for us to have some sort of governance policy with regard to establishing namespace prefixes. And then for model elements, there are rules of thumb, but there's nothing that you can send a new member of the OMG to look at with respect to how they should, you know, name the elements of their model or provide metadata for them. And so while some of that's community specific, we really do need to provide some guidance to folks that are submitting documents for standardization to the OMG. Okay, slide 20. So here are some of the other things that we're looking at doing. Change management and traceability of the changes is not well developed at all at the element level for our models at OMG, and although we have MOF versioning standards and all kinds of things that we could be applying to the process. So we've talked with a number of folks who've done a lot of research in ontology versioning specifically, and oftentimes what folks do is track two sort of parallel streams, one where they track the additions to the ontology and a separate one where they manage retractions. And that's a common approach and allows you to do a lot of comparison of how the changes were implemented and what their impact was. On the OMG side, because of the lack of reasoning but extensive background in the document space and in model development generally, MOF versioning suggests that you link to a workspace. And using the default workspace in a MOF tool gets you the latest version, and there are tools that allow you to see what the differences are between that and prior versions. But because MOF versioning doesn't support reasoning about the differences so that you can understand whether you really want to apply those changes, we need a way to be able to show how those axioms change the downstream reasoning results even when you're developing your ontology in UML or MOF. So we're investigating now mechanisms to preserve the versioning detail in the artifacts that were generated from the models, whether it's RDS XML serialized OWL or Manchester Syntax or Turtle or something else if you're talking about an OWL ontology, or XMI or some other form. What we need to do is at a minimum preserve the versioning annotations in those artifacts and have a common way of representing those. And so we're starting to put a white paper together and some instructions to submitters from the architecture board to show what they should be doing, and that's happening now. So we're going to be talking about it more at our December meeting in Santa Clara. Slide 21, please. Another area where we are really needing to provide guidance to some of the submitters is on modularity. When is a model too big? And how do you determine where to cleave it off in order to create models from a standard perspective? This came up specifically because of work going on in the Financial Services Domain Task Force, who are working on a new-ish financial industry business ontology or a set of ontologies that were mandated by the banking community but also by the regulatory community. And so Dodd-Frank and Basel II, among other legislation, are driving both the regulators and the financial services organizations to need better metadata, and this financial industry business ontology effort is one effort to start to develop some conceptual metadata that could be shared for that purpose. And it's gotten a lot of interest. Many of the big banks are participating, UBS, HSBC, Wells, Citi, JP Morgan Chase, among them, Also, regulatory bodies include the Office of Financial Research, the SEC, the CFTC, which is commodities trading. There are a boatload of them that are involved. And so this model has become this huge behemoth that describes everything from what a business entity is all the way to details about party relationships for vanilla interest rate swaps. So in order to modularize something like that, the kinds of things that you could do automatically using ontology tools may or may not work, and the kinds of guidance we would give traditionally from a UML perspective may not work. And so we're really looking at modularity as a key place where we have a lot of work to do in order to help people develop standards that are reasonable and that can be evolved independently over time. So that's one area where we're doing a lot of research right now. Slide 22, please. We've done some investigation so far on suggesting DL state equivalent rules in UML and playing with the dynamic tools that we can use to assist determining whether something is appropriately modularized, but those are not very good when you're talking about a UML model. And so some of the things we're working on are still research questions, really. So, it's a work in progress, and we're interested in having folks participate if they are interested, and certainly to be aware of what's going on, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it today. We're very interested in, new approaches to modularity, for example, or for ways of looking at the annotations for versioning where we can actually generate the UML specifications, the documents themselves from the models. We have just been able to do some of that for UML, for this latest revision to UML. We're actually not writing the specs anymore, except for the boilerplate stuff up at the front or narrative where it's needed. A lot of the specifications are now literally generated from the models, which is the way it should be. So we'd like to do more and more of that in the future, including managing change bars, showing where those should be based on having the versioning annotations appropriately set up in the models, using the metadata to drive that. And so it's very timely that Michael and Peter asked me to speak on this topic today. So slide 23, please. So just to sort of continue to beat this to the ground, there's no requirement at OMG about any metadata that should be included in the electronic files that are submitted today. And, putting my little metadata hat on, the first time I was on an architecture board meeting, I said, why is that the case? Why don't we have metadata requirements? We work with all the people that are developing these standards. We know how to do this, and we are not eating our own dog food. So in September at the OMG meeting, Pete Rivett and I proposed metadata requirements at two levels, at the model level and at the element level for any model. Most elements initially will be optional because we're trying to get people to do this, and, it's definitely a charging uphill. But at least consistent use of some of the same elements to improve readability, to try to facilitate automatic spec generation, and to be able to provide better navigation of the OMG website if we could reuse the metadata in order to improve our search capability. And we really think the metadata in the XMI files will be hugely helpful, not only to us on the AB for reviewing them, but for people in general who want to reuse them. The proposal that we made essentially reuses elements of Dublin Core and SCOS, but also we've attempted to be compatible with 1.1179. We're in the process of doing a fairly rich crosswalk to see if we can be compliant, at least to a degree, with parts of 1.1179 and possibly with at least the ontology piece of the 19.763. So as I said, there's, it's very, very timely for us to be talking about this now. We're actually doing some of the work now. I think it's a work in progress. We probably won't have something in place that we're going to require in all OMG submissions likely until sometime middle of next year. But the work's in process, and we are really leveraging some of these standards in order to do it. And they'll be published not only for models that you develop that are ODM, all models, but for all UML models, including XML schema that's represented in UML, including business process models, systems engineering models, any kind of model that is a UML model that's published by the OMG will have such metadata in it over time. And so, you know, we're really trying to make it very useful and to work through the standards that already exist so that we are compatible to the degree that we can be. Okay, so slide 24, please. So here's sort of where we are. We're still reviewing some of the issues and looking at the requirements specifically for change management and document or standard generation, which would be tremendous. And there are a number of things in process that we're using kind of as guinea pigs for the work. There's been some work at Ontolog and OASIS on quantities and units. SysML has had an annex for representation of quantities in Unix that is quite good for a number of years. That's recently been revised by JPL to try to line up some of the issues that split the community, and they are narrow. There's not a huge difference between what the date and time people want from what the systems engineering community wants, and so we're hopeful that the outcome of that will be an actual RFC standard rather than an informative annex to SysML, and we'll have an ontology associated with it. The date-time vocabulary was recently approved by the Architecture Board and I believe was adopted in September, so this slide is slightly out of date. But that's represented in SBVR, but it also has CLIF representation for some aspects, and also so common logic interchange format for many of the statements, and we're working on the ODM OWL representation so that we can publish a fairly rich date and time vocabulary for use broadly. It'll be an OMG standard. It includes things that OWL time doesn't address, such as schedules. We need that for all kinds of different calendars. We need that for the financial services work, among other things. There is a new property and casualty conceptual model that includes a vocabulary that was recently proposed. So this slide I did for the September meeting. So it was proposed in September and adopted at the meeting. So that's insurance. There's the interchange exchange policy. IEPV is a standard that's in work now, which is for security and policies and other related information interchange policies for opportunistic communities that form for emergency services, for example. And this is just addressing a high-level interchange policies, but MITRE and a number of other folks are working on that. I've already mentioned the financial business industry business ontology, the FIBO, as we fondly call it. And so we really want to use some of these emerging things as guinea pigs and apply the metadata to those as they're under development so that we can make sure that we've, you know, our requirements are covered, that we haven't done anything silly, that it's useful, and that the submitters don't find it overly onerous. And so the recommendations for what we're going to do will evolve over the coming year, but it's very, very current, and so I really thank you for the opportunity to share what it is that we're doing and welcome you to participate because folks in this community have a lot of experience in building these kinds of models and understanding the metadata that they need. We would like to be very much in line with what's going on in the ISO community, but also not make it so overweight, over heavy weight that our members won't do it. So that's kind of the challenge at this point. And that's what I had for you. So hopefully folks will have questions, or Denise in particular, if you have anything to add, please do.
Thank you, Lisa. That was a fantastic overview of all the amazing work that's going on there. I think a lot of people in Ontolog might be rather in awe of all the work that's actually being accomplished.
It's a big community. There are a lot of people doing it. The systems engineering community has been quite active. JPL has done some amazing work. They actually have used executable UML, which has a first-order representation. They use Alloy, I think, but they've also mapped a number of aspects to common logic. Their idea is that they would like to be able to reason over their engineering models to understand that the models themselves are logically consistent, which to me seems like a no-brainer. We should have been doing that forever, but in practice it's difficult to do. But for JPL, for example, or NASA or European Space Agency or anybody involved in those kinds of projects where you get one shot, it's critical.
Mm-hmm.
And the metadata is what will drive it and help people be able to reuse those models over time.
Exactly. Okay, so for the discussion portion of today's session, what we can do is hopefully everyone's on the chat. Denise is not, but I think everyone else is. And so for people who are new, there's a little hand at the bottom of the chat, of the chat window. You just click on that, and I'll attempt to moderate. Put your hand up, and I can ask you to ask your question. But I'm going to take the moderator's prerogative and ask the first question. So one of the other Ontolog efforts is the OOR, the Open Ontology Repository. And as part of that, there's been a lot of discussion about, the appropriate ontology metadata within the repository, and in particular, how that's related to OMV, the Ontology Metadata Vocabulary. Has OMV popped up in any of the discussions in your landscape?
Yes. And so we did look at it. It represents sort of a subset of some of the things that we saw in that are available in 111.79 already. There are a few key extensions that are relevant primarily to ontology that, you know, we've thought about. So the OMG stuff that we're doing right now is really to address a broad range of models, not just ontologies. And we've tried to look at how we would modularize whatever we do from a metadata standard at OMG so that we could extend it using some of those features of OMV or in other communities if there is metadata that's specifically useful there to do the same. But I don't think we would adopt OMV outright. Rather,
right.
I think what we want to do is create something that is likely 111.79 compliant and also reuses some parts of Dublin Core and SCoS where we need to say things, some provenance of some of the definitions that are represented, for example, in a financial industry business ontology. Every term and every definition has a source from multiple standards that already exist, like XBRL or FPML or MISMO for mortgage terminology and that sort of thing. And so the fisticuffs that people come to over the nuances in the terms are pretty amazing. And so having the very low-level provenance for the source of every term and every definition is really critical. And so those kinds of things are where we're focused in the moment, not necessarily on, the reasoning capabilities in the model or how expressive it is, which are some of the things that OMV touches on, among others.
Thank you. Bob Smith. It's a star 7 on the Skype keypad to unmute.
I have a question. Ravi here.
Hi. So is Bob Smith?
Yeah, was Bob, are you there, or?
He has to unmute.
Or star 7, I guess.
excellent presentation. I'm interested in seeing what the building information modeling effort can benefit from your invitation to coordinate with OMG's guinea pig search.
We'd love to have you.
What's basically the next set of steps? A lot of the members on the editing team are not what you would say ontology oriented.
Yep.
And it's a big organizational change effort. And I think we have a year, 2 year timeline before we get through the BIM 2.0 and are ready to address ontology and your standards in the BIM 3.0.
The OMG is really good about liaisons with other standards organizations, and they really are quite open to doing that kind of work. And for us, the work that we're doing only has, you know, more value if we reach out to communities like yours and provide something that is really broadly useful. With buildings becoming more and more electronically wired, or not wired, but electronically connected, with devices becoming so much smarter and being able to tell you where they are in the building and what they're sensing and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I would think that being able to relate the various building information models and the device capabilities for managing various aspects, whether it's, you know, environmental, air conditioning or what have you, or lighting or other things, water, having those things reuse the metadata. We're suggesting having them be developed synergistically from a modeling perspective. I mean, all of that sounds very good to me. So anything that we can do to help, Peter knows how to find me, and my contact details, I think, are in the Ontolog site. So please feel free to get in touch, and we would love to facilitate that. There is the next OMG meeting is in December. I think it's the week of the 11th, if that's the Sunday. The 12th is Monday. It's here in Santa Clara at the Hyatt Regency at the Convention Center next to Great America. It's a week long. The ontology session specifically is on the Thursday, but there's a lot going on all week. And so, you know, if it's possible for you to come to this one, terrific. If not, often people come to the D.C. meeting is typically the largest meeting, biggest attendance, and that will be in March. And the dates and calendar and places and all that are on the OMG website. There's a calendar tab right on the homepage, right across the top, and you can find where all our meetings are and where we're meeting. But I'd be happy to talk with you offline about it.
Great. Let's talk offline. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Robbie, you had a question.
Oh, thank you. Lisa, sorry for infrequent dialogues these days, but just bringing myself up to speed on the SysML, are the federal metadata standards like from DHS or DOD or other federal organizations included in SysML or in any of the other things in your last slides?
So there's a whole governmental working group at OMG. Typically we have people from the intelligence, from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. We have people from the Office of the Secretary of Defense. We have people from DISA. I think Len Levine is with DISA.
Yes,
which is an information standards organization, part of the DOD. We have people from NIST, Ed Barkmeyer, Conrad Bach, Wallace, of course, Allison Feeney, who is involved in the systems engineering work more. There are a number of folks from NIST who come to the meetings. We have also folks from NARA, from National Archives. There's work going on in records management that's related, and I've given talks to that group. And there, so that's National Archives and Records.
So their respective organizations' metadata, especially I was thinking of DMR or FGDC metadata, whatever it evolved to be, if anything, are those integrated in our metadata activity?
That I cannot tell you. I know of folks that are using the 111.79. Many of them don't always come to meetings, but they certainly follow what we're doing. And although I've been kind of out of pocket off and on the last year just because of family health issues, I'm hoping to come up to speed and to do more, to show up more often at SC32 again, and also to put my architecture board hat and do more speaking generally. So I'm hoping to get people involved and to, you know, really welcome anybody who wants to participate. OMG process is fairly open. Membership for small little consultants and things like that is not horrible. You just have to come to the meetings, and oftentimes for certain sessions we have telephonic representation. So folks who can't actually travel because of various budgetary constraints are often on the phone. Although face-to-face meetings are really useful for getting people to all be on the same page. So, but we would welcome any participation. And as I said, there's a lot of folks from various governmental organizations who do participate. Denise has come and spoken at some of our meetings, not in the last year or so, but certainly we've been in touch with one another.
Thank you, Elisa, for a great presentation. But as a clarification, you did mention the units of measure work that was the follow-up from the Ontology Summit. That has sort of progressed and moved on to OASIS.
Right.
I had a clarification with someone on the Ontolog Forum telling people that Ontolog Forum is just a place where we talk about interesting things. If we need to get serious, we need to move it somewhere that do serious work and to make a standard. Ontolog definitely is not an SDO, not a standards development organization. And the group, which sort of transformed itself into the OASIS QOMOS, Quantity and Units of Measure Ontology Standards Working Group, are now at OASIS. It's unfortunate that they have been stalling a little, I guess, waiting for funding and other things. But hopefully, I mean, if I can at all sort of help push that, I would hope that it will get back into action soon enough.
So what we're doing at OMG may be synergistic with that. I understand that there may be some differences just because of the sort of political history of the approach that was taken by some folks who are involved in the OASIS activity and the approach that was taken on SysML. I believe, based on discussions we had in September, that some of those issues are being resolved.
Yeah.
So if the funding doesn't happen on the OASIS side, the standard will be produced on the SysML side. So anybody who wants to participate in that activity, if we can get other people on board, would be great. And, in fact, because it is a fairly open standards environment. I know there are some folks who've been working on the SysML piece who've been trying to look at what was proposed on the OASIS side to see if they could, you know, how much alignment they could achieve to make everybody happy.
Yeah, I think it's exactly the same people who are working on that. I don't think there's any politics, but maybe, I mean, as you mentioned, there's a slight difference of approach. The OASIS Cuomo's group hopes to get the normative standard in common logic, which is probably not maybe what SysML wants to do sort of primarily. But I mean, those are unimportant. The important thing is to get the ontology out and make sure all the ontologies align with one another. In the end, I mean, I can see all ontologies need to translate to one another freely anyway.
Well, yeah, but, so there's all sorts of issues with that. How you organize your model is one thing, but level of expressivity is a big deal, and how you manage what's lost or lossy in the transformation process and how you tell people what's lost. Those are clearly issues that need to be well thought out. Off versioning in QVT, which is the query view transformation language from OMG, provides some fairly rigorous ways of doing that, but for people who haven't used those standards, maybe a bit arcane or at least a challenge at first. So there are Eclipse tools that are freely available for doing some of that model transformation work and for doing some alignment. And there are folks like Nicholas Riquette at JPL who've actually used Common Logic to try to reason over the models he's developed to confirm that they're logically consistent. He does represent some of that stuff in Common Logic. He does map all of the systems engineering models, as it turns out, to Common Logic. He also uses OWL for other purposes, but the common logic usage includes theorem proving over the model to understand that there aren't any gotchas, among other things, and for a lot of verification processes. So I wish he would write a paper, because the work that he's done is amazingly good, and getting him to talk about it, you know, he'll throw slides up for OMG presentations, but getting him to actually talk further about the detail, it, you know, takes away from the amount of time that he's spending doing the work, and so it's not his favorite thing. So I haven't seen a paper yet, but I think, you know, there are people doing that kind of work, and it's very, very exciting to see.
What was his name again, Lisa?
This is exciting.
Michael,
yeah.
Send me a note and I'll introduce you.
Right. Yeah, Nicholas Riquette used to be extremely active.
Okay.
At Ontolog. We've lost touch with him for several years. Do you know if he works close enough with Rob Raskin at JPL on let's say the units of measure? I mean the psi unit segment of the suite ontology.
I honestly don't know. I know that some of that work was done in a different group. The SysML work was done by the European Space Agency, and JPL worked with them. The work that I think you're referring to involves the Constellation Project and some folks from Top Quadrant and other people. And that may have been NASA proper. It may not have been JPL. I don't know.
Right, we have the names of people. I mean, actually, when we started the units of measure ontology standard, we sort of did a scan of the landscape and pretty much sort of know who's around. But didn't realize Nicholas was working on this, though.
For SysML.
Yeah.
And John Deere, interestingly enough, so a good friend, Roger Burkhart, a very, very smart guy from John Deere, who's been a longtime participant in OMG and also in some of the ISO work years ago, has contributed tremendously to that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other people from Lockheed Martin and from Raytheon and who else? I'm looking at faces around a room and trying to remember what companies they belong to, which is a little bit challenging. Mm. I know personalities and their, you know, individuals better than I know where they work. But so mostly big aerospace. DAE, I think, has been involved off and on. But, I mean, you know, so the requirements for systems engineering purposes are, in some cases, more deeper than the requirements, say, for the kind of date-time work that we're doing for the business modeling.
Yep.
And so getting people to agree to, you know, how where extensions need to be for SysML, but where certain value needs to be for the business side has been part of our challenge.
Great. So, and while we were talking about translations, can you, I mean, since you are very hands-on, could you give us some pointers as to the state of the art in translations, let's say between UML to OWL or XML to OWL, XML schema to OWL, database schema to OWL, in that respect?
So from
how
an OSG perspective, with the ODM, we have two different things. So one of them is through the metal modeling, which is an interface sort of approach for taking a model that is, you know, an OWL ontology and being able to transform it for use in UML, or take a UML model that you've built in the ODM and import it for use in a MOF repository. That facility is already there. And we're just updating it to OWL 2.
How about specific tools or commercial tools?
So I've tried not to be self-promoting.
Okay.
But our company has built a tool that's in beta now that is a plugin for MagicDraw, which is a UML tool, which imports and exports OWL 2 and is ODM compliant and allows you to use UML diagrams for ontology development. We're in beta now, and Nomagic will be releasing it early next year from their website. So we also have some work we've done with Enterprise Architect, which is from Spark. It's an Australian UML vendor where they're working on how you could do sort of a similar thing to our plugin for MagicDraw. The company called Adaptive, which is Pete Rivett's company, has a model repository they sell that's got very rich metadata and allows you to do a lot of where used kinds of comparisons across models, various kinds of model mapping. They support the ODM meta model for RDF and OWL. They can import OWL ontologies into their MOF repository and transform them to UML now. That's available today. So there are people that are working on it, and a lot of it's ODM-based, and we're just, you know, running as fast as we can to finish the revisions to support OWL 2, which at least the main ones that most of the people at OMG are asking for, so that we can provide better coverage. But there are tools out there, and, you know, there's still some of them are still early, mostly because the community is just finally recognizing that they need to draw the pictures. What we don't yet have are tools to do the same thing for common logic.
That's exactly my next question. I mean, I was trying to ask, I mean, what about sort of the same set of questions for common logic?
Not that we don't want to. Bandwidth and resources for doing that have been tight. The latest version of that date-time vocabulary actually includes the CLIP, the common logic. And so you can see what it looks like in SBVR, what it looks like in common logic, and ultimately what it looks like in OWL will be included as well. So the same expression, the same definition for some sort of a calendar date or a schedule or a time scale or any of those sorts of things will be available in all of those for comparison purposes. I think the tools that automate that process will be, a while in coming. But at least the spec will give you some notion of how to compare the two.
Thank you very much.
Sure. And I saw a question from Michael about modularity. So
yes.
UML modularity, UML model modularity, is an interesting thing. It's not quite the same thing as what we would consider modularity in OWL. So there are some subtle differences. One of the things that we prohibit you from doing to the degree that we can when you're working in UML, but which ontologists do all the time, is create all kinds of circular dependencies between things. So, for example, Dublin Core, which I both like and dislike, reuses properties in various ways so that the Dublin Core elements are dependent on terms and vice versa. And they aren't the only ones that are guilty of that. A number of early ontologies in KIF before Common Logic that we found, even in the Ontolingua at Stanford KSL, had something like 13 circular dependencies between three different ontologies. In UML, that's a real problem because UML tools are often used for generating other kinds of code, like source code for Java or C++ or something else. So if you're going to do code generation, circular dependencies between models does not work. So modularity for us means that, you know, it really closer to what I'll call DL safe rules. So you need to ensure that you don't make any changes to a model you import. And in our own experience with the plugin we built for ODM OWL, we've imported up to like 175 ontology, what I'll call them modules, into a single model project at once, successfully. And we were able to do that in part because the folks who built those ontologies modularized them very well. And secondly, because we enforced this, you know, you can't change the imported model rule so that we didn't end up with inconsistencies across the models. And so some examples. If you import an ontology and there's a class in that that you want to add a property to, you have to do what we call localize the class. So you have to have a local copy of the class in your model that relates back to the original class in the imported model, and then you have to add your property to the local copy because you cannot have a domain of a property be in a model that you're importing. It has to be local because that actually changes the definition of the class. So there are things like that. There are a handful of things like having generalizations in both directions when you want to talk about equivalence between two classes that you can't do across models in UML. So what we've done instead is use dependencies rather than generalizations in some cases, which means when you're in the tool, you may not get what you thought you should in terms of inherited properties for the equivalence relationship. But in order to manage model consistency, we're sort of stuck. So there are things like that that are critical. But in general, you know, we try to keep parts of models that could evolve independently separate from one another. We try to loosely couple those kinds of things if that's possible. We try to say, you know, look, if you could reuse part of this model, but you don't want the rest of it, that's a use case that we should consider when we're talking about modularity. And so things like that, they're just, you know, sort of common sense-y things. In addition to the UML-specific issues involved in multiple links across models that create these circular dependencies or model inconsistencies from a UML perspective. So all of that is sort of what I mean by modularity. So a little more complex than just DL-safe rules, but we also try to enforce DL-safe rules so that people can actually reuse things and understand what it is that they're getting when they download a model and they want to reuse it.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there other questions?
Thank you, Elisa.
Oh, you're welcome. Nice to hear your voice, Robbie.
All right. Well, I guess if there aren't any other questions, I just like, again, somebody chatting. Okay, no, someone's writing on the chat board. So if there aren't any other questions, I just, again, like to thank Elisa for like an amazing presentation, an eye-opening presentation to all the work that's being done. And I think a lot of great connections kind of are arising from this. And I think there will be, if you're looking for people to help, I think there'll be a lot of people, not online today, but people who will be listening to this later on that will be happy to join in.
We absolutely need it. I mean, you can see how much stuff is going on, and yet there aren't enough of us to really do it justice. And all of these things are needed at once, not enough bodies to do them. People are really overloaded. We would be thrilled to have more help. So, you know, feel free to get in touch if there's something in specific that you're interested in, or Michael knows where to find me, Peter knows where to find me. We would be happy to have more participation. So I saw Fabian was on the call for a while from NIST, and he also has done quite a bit of work in some of the common logic-related areas at NIST. And so I believe he's developing a reasoner. It's a common logic reasoner. I don't know what state it's in or whether it's going to become an open-source project, but for those of you interested in common logic specifically, you might get in touch with Fabian.
Okay. So, Peter, is there anything else to mention at this point?
No, this will be it. And
okay. So, yes, and hopefully the next session, the next session in this series of ontologies and standards will be kind of a revisiting of common logic, maybe to kind of kickstart again some of the efforts around that. And we're looking at a December date for that. November is very busy on Thursdays at this time. So as soon as we confirm the dates and participants, look forward to that, Common Logic in December.
Terrific.
So thank you, everyone, for participating. Thank you, Elisa, for a presentation. And talk to everyone very soon in our next session of Ontologies and Standards.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, great session. Bye-bye.